Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On this Wednesday. Wednesday's usually a turn the corner day for me anyway. So I'm glad I've turned the corner. Tape a TV show. Get that done. Yeah, among other things. Guess we're gonna have tomorrow. We're gonna have a grand extravaganza on the show tomorrow. Tomorrow we've got our high school announcers tomorrow. I mean, now they finally get the, now that Shikalemi's rolling, I mean, it's amazing what happens with addition by subtraction. What? What are you laughing at?
What are you talking about? How are you?
Good to see you. Addition by subtraction.
Right.
It's not fair.
Less is more.
Boy, that frilazzo's good. But we'll have everybody on tomorrow. Pat O'Brien about Selins Grove. We'll talk about Lewisburg. We'll talk about Milton. And, of course, about Shikalemi all in tomorrow's show. So we're looking forward to that.
And we can't wait until Friday, so we're going to have picks tomorrow.
Yes, picks. Yes. We will replay the picks on Friday, by the way.
Okay.
Just in case. Because, you know, we do want to make it consistent. So we got a lot going on. This will be fun. Now today, Ruben Frank's on the show. Looking forward to that. That'll be at 3:35 today. It'll be a lot of fun. And Greg Pickle today. Let's see. You only have Ruben Frank, right?
Correct.
I've got Greg Pickle, and I've got Brendan Quinn from MLive.com today. How about that? And our play-by-play call of the day is the incomparable Tom Hamilton from the Cleveland Indians. Now, tonight on ESPN, it'll be a doubleheader. The Red Sox will play the Orioles in the first game of the doubleheader, but the nightcap will be the Dodgers and the Giants from Chavez Ravine, and they will pay tribute to Vin Scully. Last night, they had Vin Scully bobblehead night at Dodger Stadium. Last night, they drew more than 53,000 fans to the game for Vin Scully bobblehead night. It is the largest crowd of any kind in Major League Baseball since the 2014 season. Tonight, they will pay tribute to Vin Scully. And on ESPN, and the fourth inning, they will pick up the Dodger broadcast. So you can hear one of the truly great play-by-play guys and storytellers of this time and of any time. There's an old joke that no one hits into a double play to end the inning when Vin starts a story. It's amazing in that way.
Monday night was great, too. Madison Bumgarner and Yasiel Puig was exchanging words, and Vince Scully was doing the translation. It was great.
And, of course, he did it in such a calming way.
He did.
Well, these guys, the whole world made it seem like it was baseball's version of Armageddon. And meanwhile, Vin's like, well, he said this, and he said that, and he said this, and they're playing ball again. But Vin Scully, like every market, and we've talked about this before, but it's worth talking about again, and we'll talk about it. We'll be talking about it the day he steps aside, too. The day he steps aside will be the day that every play-by-play announcer in America goes up one notch on the ladder. Because everybody's behind him. And it was interesting that yesterday, for the football show, the football TV show, and there's one I tape that's with Trey Bauer and Todd Sadowski that we do. Then there's, of course, the Unrivaled TV show. Well, I do produce a segment for the Unrivaled TV show. It's the Roar segment. So this week it's going to be on Haley Washington from the Penn State women's volleyball team. First team All-American, national champion, academic All-American, and a voracious reader. So we decided to do the interview with her since she is such a voracious reader at the Stacks at Petit Library, which is essentially her sanctuary. And she was showing me where the books were for, the approximate area where the books were for Plato and Socrates. Eventually, I found the books on Plato and Socrates. And then, of course, I picked up Plato and was reading the conversations with Socrates in there at that time. And so I had to tell her the story about Vin Scully, that when Socrates Brito of the Arizona Diamondbacks came to the plate, he launched into the story of Socrates, which now brings you to the essence of what the profession is. The profession is obviously the ability to put into words descriptions that paint pictures, something that's interesting, to capture a moment. You have to do all of that. But it's also a lot of work is done when you're not speaking. When you're interviewing someone, I don't care if I'm interviewing Joe Susan or if I'm interviewing James Franklin or Patrick Chambers or whomever. One of the keys in doing an interview, I think an effective one, is being a very good listener. You can't just lock in when you're interviewing someone or having a conversation with someone and be locked in on what you're going to say or what you're going to ask next. You have to be relaxed enough to listen, because then the subject can take the conversation in a completely different and, in all likelihood, far more interesting direction if you're listening and then can hit with the follow-up questions that can make a difference that really brings out the best in them and the best for you, the listener, by being a good listener. When you're doing play-by-play, now Vin Scully doesn't fall into this category over the last few decades because Vin Scully does Dodgers games alone since the death of Don Drysdale. But when you're doing a broadcast, so when I'm working with Dick Girardi on basketball, Jack Ham on football, one of the keys, I think, to making an effective broadcast is that I have to also be a good listener there as well. Because Jack is so good and so skilled at what he does, Dick Girardi is so good and so skilled at what he does, they can take the broadcast in a completely different and much better direction. And if I'm listening and not just caught up in my own world, that allows us to take that flow of the broadcast in a direction where someone with great intelligence and a real sense and a feel for it can then make it better for the fan. So you have to be a good listener when you interview. You have to be a good listener when you're doing play-by-play, working with someone else. And then in your, quote, downtime, you have to be able to take the time you're not on the air and use it constructively to make sure you're set to go. Know who all the players are. Know what stories happen to be, whatever role you're in. I'll give you a good example of knowing the people you're around and the and how important reading happens to be. And it would be on this topic. Today, two players were at the State College Quarterback Club. Tyler Davis, the place kicker, wide receiver Deshaun Hamilton. Now, you can walk into that setting and just start asking, hey, you know, what about this kick? What about that kick? What about this reception? What happened in the Pitt game? How'd you bounce back from that? Why was it like, okay, that's fine. You know, what about Michigan? What do you think of Michigan? Or you can go in there into that setting and know that Tyler Davis is an econ major, that he had wanted to major in business, but because he transferred, he was not allowed to transfer and take business at Penn State, so he's an econ major. That he started his career in soccer at Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois. That he scored the game-winning goal against UMass for Bradley, but then, for various circumstances, decided he wanted to transfer. Well, his coach at Bradley would not sign the transfer papers allowing him to transfer in soccer, so he turned his attention to football. And then he sent a series of tapes to Penn State and wanted to get the attention of Charles Huff before he finally did, and eventually walked on, and that the first football game in his life that he ever participated in was last year. That when he was a sophomore in high school, he was in a terrible car accident. Had cuts to his face and had to be homeschooled for 3 months. And it gave him a different perspective on life, a different perspective on school. Deshaun Hamilton was there today. Yeah, we could talk about you made this catch, you made that catch, you did this, you did that. Yeah, and you can absolutely do that. But there's more to it than that. He grew up in a military family. He was actually born in Okinawa, Japan. He moved around the country because his family was in the military. California, Chicago, Virginia, you know, both Fredericksburg and Quantico. And at one point, his parents were not split up, but they were split because of deployments. They were living in California, the father was, and she was in Italy before they finally got the family back together when the deployments ended. And that he has a brother and a sister. Well, his brother's a special story. Deshaun Hamilton's brother is autistic. And the numbers on autism have been staggering over the years. 1 in 500. Then it became 1 in 200. Then 1 in 160. Now it's like 1 in every 70 or 75 individuals born with autism. And how it taught him the lessons of life, that he can't have a down day because he'll look at his brother throwing everything he has into his life and all the challenges that he has to overcome to make every day count. And that it's an inspiration for Deshaun to see his brother out there in that line before a game and the bond that they have. And to go back now to Vin Scully, when he tells the story about 13 isn't really an unlucky number. When he talks about Socrates, when Socrates Brito's up at the plate, or the fact that, you know, Bryce Harper's father in Las Vegas was a steel worker and things like that. Reading is something that becomes really important in this job, that if you constructively take your downtime and you use it constructively where it's enjoyable, but at the same time, instructive, that can then benefit the broadcast later, you do that. So that's why he's been able to do that. You can tell he himself, like Haley Washington, is a voracious reader. And then it comes through with his great memory to then relate these stories on the air. And as I said, you have to do the same thing in this. Tyler Davis shows up. You want to tell, you know, everybody learn a little bit more about him. What happened in the accident? You know, how did it reshape his life? What, you know, Deshaun, what did your brother mean to you growing up? And, you know, how much do you respect your parents, for example, that, you know, sometimes a child can dominate all the lives in a family, and the fact that they've split their lives up so much to make sure everybody got the fair slice of attention. I mean, things like that. Where if you use your downtime constructively, which obviously Vin Scully has, you can then add to a broadcast that makes a difference. And he's been able to do it for 67 years. Michael Kay from Yes Network made an incredible point the other night. Think of this. When Vin Scully started broadcasting in 1949 in Brooklyn, the age of 22, Connie Mack was still managing the Philadelphia A's. I think Connie Mack managed the A's, I want to say, until 55. Jacket, tie, sometimes a straw hat. Connie Mack was born when Abraham Lincoln was president. Think of the linkage. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Obviously, there have been a lot of great broadcast legends. Harry Callis with the Phillies, Richie Ashburn, Bob Prince, Jim Woods with the Pirates, Mike Lang, Bill Hillgrove, Merrill Reese. You can go through all of them. Bob Wolf, Mel Allen, Red Barber, Fran Fischer. Obviously, the Fran beloved, the soundtrack of so many for the 70s and early 80s. And then when he was with George, I mean, Fran was unbelievable. Last Saturday was the 50th anniversary of Fran's first Penn State broadcast. He was, like, I think the third guy at that point. He became the play-by-play guy in 1970. Jack Buck with St. Louis, Harry Carey, Jack Brickhouse, Lon Simmons, Dave Niehaus, John Miller, Ted Leitner, Dick Enberg, Marty Glickman. So many great ones over the years. So many great ones in this state. Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell with the Orioles. Ernie Harwell. The list is long. I mean, if it's your team in your area, that's your legend. And Vince Scully has been incredible.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, key routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. And then Reuben Frank. It was on this date in 1970 that Monday Night Football made its debut on ABC. The game between the Browns and the Jets. Browns won it 31-21. Howard Cosell told everyone that the knees of Bill Nelson were worse than Joe Namath's. People were angry. 1971, the American League approved the move of the Washington Senators to Arlington, Texas, to become the Texas Rangers. 1982, the NFL players began a 57-day strike. It was their first regular season walkout. 2008, the Yankees played their final game at Old Yankee Stadium. The new stadium opened across the street in 2009. Penn State played the Pinstripe Bowl in the new stadium in 2014. And Jack Campbell's on the phone with his wife, Joanne. And I'm sitting there at the table, and he's talking to him, and he says, well, yeah, he says, you know, I played in the original Yankee Stadium, he says, across the street against Fran Tarkenton and the Giants. And she didn't believe him, so he had to hand me the phone. I said, yeah, Joanne, he did. He says, it wasn't the renovated one, it was the old one. He actually did. And I looked over, I said, I hope that makes you A, feel better, and B, feel old. All right. Let's bring in Reuben Frank, CSN Philly. Reuben, welcome. Great to have you with us. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show for the first time.
Great to be here. Happy to do it.
All right. You watched the game Monday night, and you watched the opener as well. How good are they at this stage?
Well, it's tough to tell. You know, we've seen a lot of 2-0 teams that end up 4-12. Certainly, the Eagles in 2012 were 3-1. They won their first couple, and they won two more games the rest of the year. So you need to wait and see and take a step back and just kind of try to be level-headed about it. But I think the big thing is they're doing it on both sides of the football. They're not making mistakes. They're playing smart. And they don't just have a new quarterback. They have a new coach as well. So the growing pains, I think, that a lot of people in Philly expected have been non-existent. And they, I think when you have a young quarterback who's playing well, it really gives an entire team a lot of juice. You know, it kind of brings everybody, gives everybody kind of a sense of purpose, a reason to play and a reason to prepare. And, you know, a month ago, Sam Bradford was the quarterback, and I think, you know, the Vegas over-under was like 6.5 wins or something like that. And when you get a quarterback who's hot and, you know, and playing the way Carson Wentz is, I think it really does have like a ripple effect throughout the team. It just kind of gives everybody a little more energy, a little more juice, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Ruben, you look at him, and look, he's just a kid, so it's going to take time to grow into the full package of what Carson Wentz can be. But what do you like about him so far that you see are solid building blocks that they can move forward with?
Everything. he's got all the measurables and the size and the arm and all that stuff. But I think the most impressive thing for me from Carson in these two games has been his recognition. And when he gets to the line of scrimmage and gets the ball, he hasn't made one bad decision. He hasn't had one incident where what he thought he saw was not what a defense was doing. And that's why he's been able to get through two games without a turnover, no fumbles, no interceptions, really no throws that could have been intercepted. He hasn't had a ball that was dropped by a D-back. So his recognition, his ability to get to the line of scrimmage and really diagnose what the defense is trying to do, whether they're dropping guys back, whether they're blitzing, whether they're going zone or man, he's got this ability to diagnose it and go through his progressions and get the ball out quickly to the open guy and do it all in mistake-free fashion. And you don't see that from a lot of quarterbacks with experience. So to see a young kid who just getting started in his career, who missed most of training camp, to see him make those decisions at a 100% level is uncanny.
Ruben, yeah, the decision-making has been outstanding by him so far. Doug Peterson has never really been a play caller along the way, but now he's out there and he's a play caller. Now, it's only two games, but what kind of feel do you think Peterson has for his quarterback in the plays he does call?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think we're seeing that he's it's interesting. He's like you would think with a young quarterback who doesn't have a lot of experience, you would bring him along slowly. You try to run the ball and get him comfortable. But he hasn't done that. He treats him like a veteran. And, you know, Monday night, listen, this was Carson Wentz's first road game of his life, his first Monday night game, his first national TV game. You're going to the Soldier Field, and I know the Bears aren't a great team this year, but I've been in that place enough to know how intimidating Soldier Field is. You know, you're on the lake, it's windy, and it's imposing. It's an imposing place. And he didn't, he didn't baby him at all with the game plan. I think the first six snaps were throws. So there's no sense of, hey, we're going to kind of, bring him along slowly and get him comfortable and get his feet wet. We're just going to go attack. And I think he's got such a level of confidence in Carson that he's able to call a game for a veteran quarterback as opposed to calling a game for a rookie quarterback. And Doug has shown a tremendous sense of I think in the two games he's called of how to call a game, how to keep a defense off balance, mix in the run and pass. You know, they threw it like 80% of the time in the first half Monday night, and then they ran it 80% of the time in the second half. So they built the lead with the passing game, and then sat on the lead and protected the lead with the running game. And I've been so impressed with his play calling. Like you said, he's never done this before, and it really seems like he's got a good feel for it. Uses all his guys, uses all his weapons, and and just has a very good sense of how a defense is going to attack and how to go after it.
Conversely, Jim Schwartz has been a veteran defensive play caller. What kind of feel do you feel he has for the scheme and the personnel the Eagles have that's allowed them to be effective defensively?
Well, it all starts up front. I think they have one of the best D-lines in the game, and they're guys that have been around, most of them since, this is their third coach together, they've all been around since, you know, Brandon Graham since 2010, Vinnie Curry since 2012, Fletcher since 2012, Fletcher Cox, you know, Barwin and Benny Logan since 2013. So this is a group that's been together a long time. It's the strength of the team. And I think that gives him a real sense of, I can get to the quarterback without blitzing. And I think you'll see Jim Schwartz, what did he blitz, twice the other night? He's right. Just going to drop guys back. And you know, he feels like he can get enough pressure on the quarterback without blitzing. That it really gives him the, you know, they got kind of an inexperienced secondary and a young secondary and a, you know, maybe not the most talented secondary. So it really gives him the luxury of, you know, of I can play the run and I can get to the quarterback with my guys up front because that's the strength of the team, and I can devote all my other resources to coverage, and that's what they've done in two games, and it's worked. They really got six sacks in two games, and you know, neither quarterback has lasted the game. RG3 and Cutler both. We're long gone by the fourth quarter. So I think Schwartz has really kind of taken the personnel that was here that, you know, that played under Chip Kelly and Bill Davis, and with a couple of additions, he's really tailored it to what he wants to do.
I mean, Ruben, as you correctly pointed out, yeah, they're 2-0, but we don't know how this is going to play out over the next 14. That's what makes it fun. We don't know. But at this stage, what are the weaknesses that they need to shore up in order to help them to have a better season?
Yeah, I think they have not run the ball well in either game, and Doug has committed to the run. They've run it a lot. I think they're eighth in the league in rushing attempts, but they're 21st in rushing average. They're averaging like 3.5 yards a pop. So I think it puts a little too much pressure on Carson when you're not running the ball. And they've run it well enough to kind of move the sticks a little bit. But against better teams, they're going to have to find a way to run the ball because otherwise you're just putting too much on Carson. So I think the O-line has been very good pass blocking, but not good run blocking. I think the interior in particular has not been exceptional. I think right now I would say the cornerbacks and the O-line, the running game, are the two things you kind of look at. You know, they went right after Jalen Mills, who's a 22-year-old rookie, seventh-round pick, the Bears did. And, you know, they hit a big play early, and then he played really well after that. And I know the Steelers are going to, you know, they're going to look out there and see Jalen Mills, and they're going to go after him with Antonio Brown. And that's what teams are going to do. And you know, there's not a lot of teams starting a seventh-round rookie out there. So teams are going to go after him, and they've already given up three pass plays of 44 yards or more, so that's something they have to clean up as well, the big plays on defense. I think the running game and the interior of that O-line are some things that you look at right now and have to be fixed.
When I did the Rose Bowl with Jack Ham, they had plexiglass between the booths, and the USC broadcasters were in the booth to our left. And we looked over, and Paul McDonald was standing there. And Jack kids around, he looks at me, and he says, "Ruben," he says, "you want to know my career lasted 12 years? I said, yeah. I says, "Well, because you were great?" He says, "No, because that's what I hit for 12 years." And you know, McDonald's like 6'2", about 185 pounds. He says, "If I had to hit Roethlisberger all the time," he says, "I don't know how long my career would have lasted." What were the Eagles saying about Roethlisberger in the pocket and that difficulty it brings?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like, you know, there's an old cartoon I remember seeing where a little Little League baseball player comes home from school and his dad said, you know, "How did you do? How did you do today?" And he says, "Well, I had a no-hitter until the big kids got out of school." And, and that's what this is like, you know, RG3 and Jay Cutler, you know, but now the big kids are getting out of school. And gosh, Roethlisberger, you know, he's always been a problem for this team. I mean, he's been a problem for every team. In 2004, Eagles went to the Super Bowl. They only lost one game that year, and that was in Pittsburgh to Roethlisberger. And you know, so he's been a thorn in their side forever. They have a tremendous amount of respect for him. Brandon Graham, actually, the defensive end, had a funny quote. He said, you know, he's big, he's strong, he's tough, and there's not one person that can bring him down by himself, unless it's Fletcher Cox. Yeah. So they know that it's going to take numbers to get him down. I mean, they know that he can. You think you've got him wrapped up. You think you've got him tackled. You think you got him sacked. And how many times have we seen him just break out of that and just run around and make it up and chuck it down the field? So they know what they're in for. They know the challenge that they're facing. They have a short week. And I think, you know, they're all kind of saying, listen, this is a measuring stick game for us. You know, we beat a Browns team that really didn't bring a lot to the table. We beat a Bears team that was, you know, nobody really picked to do much of anything. But now it's real. You know, now we'll see what we're made of. We'll see if, we'll see where we stand. And I think they're really looking forward to the challenge. And I think this is a bunch of people that they want to play the best teams. They want to play good teams because they want to see where they stack up and where they measure up. And they'll find out Sunday afternoon.
And my follow-up to that is, if that's the team's attitude, what's the sense in the city about the team in this game?
Well, you know, it's amazing. And a few weeks ago, Sam Bradford was the quarterback, and there was, like, no life around the team. And everybody kind of thought, well, they're going to go 7-9 or 8-8, and then Bradford will be gone, and we'll have a new quarterback. And, you know, there's really not a lot of interest. There's not a lot of electricity around the team. And all of a sudden, when they traded him to the Vikings and Wentz became a starter, it just kind of electrified the whole city. And then you go 2-0 with a team that, you know, people were saying was going to win 6-7 games. And, you know, it's only multiplied. So now you have, I mean, I picked the Steelers to win the Super Bowl this year, so I don't know what other people in the country did, but this is an elite team coming in. This is a team that, and by the way, I went to, when I was at Ohio Wesleyan, Kevin Colbert was the baseball coach, the general manager of the Steelers.
Wow.
So I've known Kevin Colbert for 30, I don't know, figure out the math, but I've known him for 35 years. So I have so much respect for that franchise, and I know everybody here does too. And, you know, it's a home game. It's a 4:30 game. It's, you know, it's going to be packed in that place. It's going to be, you know, it's been a while since this team has played a big emotional game against an elite team at home. So I think it's going to be a wild atmosphere. Listen, it's a great interstate rivalry. Both ends of Pennsylvania meeting. I wish we could play in State College. I'll tell you what, get 100,000 people in that place, you know, and we all go out for ice cream at the, what do you call that place there?
The Creamery.
Yeah, the Creamery, yeah. Yeah, and, but it's, I think it's as exciting as this city, as excited as the city's been in a couple of years for a football game.
Absolute pleasure for us to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for your insight. The audience enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Thanks, Ruben.
You got it. Anytime.
Ruben Frank from CSN Philly. He always gives great perspective. Great to have him on the show. Absolutely great to have him on the show. And speaks very highly of the suit, I might add. You know, we've had one guest after. Have you noticed we've had one guest after another come on and go, "Wow, Mike Filazzo is doing a great job."
I noticed that too.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah,
yeah. Just you know, I'd throw that in there. How is Wally Pipp doing, by the way?
He's doing great. Told me to tell you hi.
Well, good. Has he ever Googled Wally Pipp?
In the privacy of the, if he has, he hasn't admitted to me, probably within the, you know, his own four walls.
Because I think at the end of this Shiklemy season, there are going to be some serious conversations. Serious stuff. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Next half hour, Patriot News and PennLive.com. Final half hour, Brendan Quinn, who covers Michigan and has the privilege every week of covering Jim Harbaugh. It's an interesting beat to be on.
Not boring, anyway.
Oh. The other day, he comes into the press conference, okay? And guess what he starts talking about? His wife's OBGYN appointment. You're like, what are we doing here? I mean, imagine having to go home after doing that. No one is a legend in their own house. Okay? I'm sure she had to look at him and go, what are you doing?
What was the great debate last week? There was someone dug up an old video of him on the sideline. He was like picking his nose, whether he was doing that. Or I'm like, okay, we're going that far down the barrel.
Yeah, but you know what? That kind of stuff. One of the great failings in this business is that in this business you get too sidetracked by unimportant things, and unimportant things take on a life of their own. It is completely unimportant as to what he did, and I could care less. Hey, what's important? All right, well, let's take it from a football point of view. From a football point of view, his stance on satellite camps, the fact that they're out there, they got canceled, brought back. What's the big picture in recruiting when it comes to satellite camps, which he's been a driving force behind? Is there too much put on them? Is it dragging out the recruiting season way too long? Is it providing more contact and easier for players to get to? I mean, those are important debates to have. Instead of the sidetrack stuff about he likes whole milk and Urban Meyer drinks 1% or skim milk. I mean, that was honestly a story this week. I'm like, what? I mean, I bypass this stuff all the time, just saying, stop taking your eye off the ball. Okay, what's more important, a guy dropping the ball at the one-yard line, which we see repeatedly in college football and even in the pros, where you're showboating and just really being stupid, right? That's not too harsh a word. You're being stupid. Okay? And then the fact you have replay people who are out getting donuts at the time and don't notice it. Why are you up there reviewing every single play? Guy just dropped the ball at the half-yard line. You're not reviewing it? I mean, those are areas that are of concern that need to be talked about. And I don't care what Jim Harbaugh did with his nose and what, it doesn't matter. I mean, we just take our eye off the ball with so many stupid, irrelevant stories. I'm not saying you, Sean. I'm just saying the media in general gets enamored with these stories that take on a life of their own that mean nothing. Zero.